Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to a super bonus extra Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. That's what it is. It's me talking. It's you listening. I don't think we need to go into it any deeper than that, do we? I mean, we could if you wanted, but what's the point? It would just frustrate both of us. Me, because I don't know what to say, and you, because you don't want to hear it anyway. I'm doing this one because we are playing tomorrow night our most important European game for... what, 9 years? Yes, when we played the Champions League semi-final against Manchester United in 2009. What an occasion it was. The atmosphere, the flags. And then Kieran Gibbs slipped and they scored, and that was pretty much that for the entire tie. It didn't last very long, the excitement. So we're hoping that it will last a little bit longer against Atletico Madrid. We play the first game tomorrow night at the Emirates Stadium before we go to Spain next week to successfully navigate our path into the Europa League final. At least I very much hope that's what happens in Spain next week in Madrid, because I'm going to the game and I hope that it is as successful and enjoyable as the last time I was in Madrid, which was back in 2006. You might remember. A certain Thierry Henry scored a certain goal at the certain Bernabeu while a certain Cesc Fabregas came of age. And we had good fun that night. It was freezing cold, but they had lovely heaters in the Bernabeu. It was fantastic. We stood under the heaters. We watched Arsenal win 1-0, and it was just all-round great fun. So I'm hoping that's the case in Madrid next week. But look, enough waffle. With me to discuss this game, how Atletico are going to set up, how they might approach it, and also a little bit later on in the podcast about Raul Sanyehi, who is, of course, the new Arsenal director of football. Sorry, head of football relations. He's not allowed to be called director of football until after Arsene Wenger leaves. Some thoughts on Luis Enrique as a potential candidate to replace Arsene Wenger. But all of that is with Madrid-based journalist Dermot Corrigan. Hi, Dermot.
Hey, Andrew. Good to talk to you.
Tell me a little bit about what kind of a team Atletico Madrid are. What sort of challenges are Arsenal going to face on Thursday evening at the Emirates?
Yeah, Atletico are they're a similar enough team to the Atletico that have been punching above their weight in Europe in previous seasons. You know, Simeone's their team, they're well set up, they're hard to beat, they're tough at the back. They don't score loads of goals, and they'd like to kind of arm wrestle opponents into submission. The main kind of development this year is, or in recent weeks especially, is that they're very low on numbers at the moment. They've had a weird season, really, between going out of the Champions League early, moving to a new stadium, a FIFA transfer ban last summer, and the squad is really unbalanced. They sold players to three players left for China in the winter window. They didn't bring in any replacements, and now they've had a couple of injuries. So they're stumbling towards the end of the season. They've not been going so well in La Liga at the moment. They were beaten 3-0 at Real Sociedad last week, 2-0 at home to Betis at the weekend. So they are the... You know, when the draw was made, everybody thinks about Atletico as this really tough, really physical, really energetic, motivated team. And maybe we will see that on Thursday. But if so, they're going to have to find that energy from somewhere, because in recent weeks they've been kind of fading a bit, and it's probably a good time to face them, I think.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, because looking at the form and looking at the league table, obviously they're second in La Liga, which is an achievement in itself when you consider the resources available to the clubs who you would expect to be above them, Barcelona and Real Madrid, obviously, who are falling behind. I think the thing that stands out to me is the defensive record. They've conceded just 18 goals. By comparison, Madrid have let in 36. They've only scored 54, though, compared to 83 for Barcelona, 80 for Real Madrid. But recent form has been relatively patchy, I guess, in comparison to what's come previous to this. I think they've won just 3 of their last 8. They've lost 3 games in their last 8 and drawn a couple. So, Will that be playing on their minds, do you think, as a team that is very well organized and very well structured? Is this going to be something else that they have to contend with?
Yeah, I think so. Like, All Black, after the game at the weekend on the TV and then again in the mix zone at the Wanda, was talking about just, he used the word tired, which is not really a word that you expect players to use in public, even if they are feeling it, to go out and admit that, yeah, we are tired, we are struggling a bit at the minute because it's been such a long season and because they have so few players to choose from and not much of a chance to be rotated. Like, it's gone in parts their season. They started off not so well at all. You know, losing to Chelsea at home in the Champions League was a big blow. Then, you know, they drew twice against Karabag from Azerbaijan. That knocked them out of the competition. And when Costa came in January, when Costa was available in January, suddenly Griezmann started playing really well again. Suddenly they were flying. You know, they hammered Sevilla. They had some really good results in the, when they got into Europa League. You know, they were flying through the last 16, the quarterfinals, and it seemed that things were coming together perfectly for them. And now they've hit a dip again. A couple of injuries. Felipe Luis is a really big loss for them at the back. Costa is out. Looks like he's not going to be able to play on Thursday because he's got a weird kind of thigh muscle injury that they haven't given us too much details about. So maybe he'll come back. It could be that they're keeping him for this and they'll throw him in. But again, that's a risk. So it's hard to predict how things will go for Atletico. With the history of how things have gone under Simeone, it's possible that they will come out flying, you know, all guns blazing. They'll be really up for it. They'll go flying into the tackles and maybe they'll think might be able to intimidate Arsenal a bit or to blow them away with their energy. But, you know, watching their last couple of games, especially away from home, you know, we haven't seen that. So it's going to be something that they either can pull it off on a once-off or it's a chance for Arsenal to take advantage.
Do you think there's any sense that the recent away form has been in part due to the focus turning to the Europa League in much the same way as it has for Arsenal this season? I think there's no danger, of course, of Atletico missing out on Champions League football next season, whereas for Arsenal, this is the only entry, the only possible way to get into the Champions League. Nevertheless, when it comes to winning something, they're so far behind Barcelona, they're not going to catch them. So for this season to be a success, from a silverware point of view, they've had to focus a little bit on that. Is there any sense that that could be an explanation?
Yeah, for sure. There could be something in that, all right. Like the one game that they haven't lost of their last four away was at the Bernabeu, where they, you know, it was a big game, a bit like going to Arsenal. You know, it was a big game that they were up for it. It was important for them not to lose because Madrid might have caught them and jumped over them into second in the table. So when the focus was really on, and when they really needed to do it, they played well in that game. Madrid had more of the ball, as you'd expect it, between Madrid and Atletico. But Atletico, you know, they dug in, they defended pretty well. Oblak made a couple of good saves. Then when Madrid did manage to score, Atletico suddenly went on the attack and scored, equalised within a couple of minutes, could have scored a couple more goals. Then suddenly realised, OK, 1-1 will do us, and sat back again to defend. So it was a kind of a feeling that when they were really pushed to it and they had to come out and attack and show what they can do, then they did do it. So, yeah, as you say, when maybe similar to Arsenal, that they've been keeping their best performances for the bigger games towards the end of the season, and Thursday is obviously one of them.
Sure. Now, when it comes to big games like this, does Simeone have a specific tactical approach? You know, will he look at the way the opposition are going to play? Is his natural inclination to be defensive? I mean, clearly it is. That's, you know, a big strength of Atletico Madrid is how organized they are at the back and how difficult they are to score against. But when you go to somewhere like Real Madrid, when you go to somewhere like Barcelona, who are hugely potent attacking teams, does he tailor his approach slightly differently than for other opposition? I'm not saying that Arsenal are on the same level as Barcelona or Real Madrid in any sense, but if there is a strength to the way that Arsenal play, it's when the attack clicks, and when it works, it really can be quite lethal. Arsenal have been scoring quite a lot of goals in recent weeks as well, particularly at home. They've been a lot more potent than earlier in the season. So how do you feel he's going to set up for this one?
The thing about with Simeone and what he does so well, or what he's got put into his team so well, is their ability to play differently depending on the situation in the game. Like he often says at press conferences, and it's a phrase that's difficult enough to translate into English, but he talks about bringing the game to where his team are more comfortable, that they want to not so much to control the possession or to control territory in the game, but play the game on their terms. And that can mean, especially early in the game, pressing high up, kind of making the other team uncomfortable, making the other team doubt about what they're going to do. So I don't think it's going to be a case where it's hard to know, but my good feeling would be that they're not going to sit back and kind of park the bus, especially in the first 20 minutes at the Emirates, that they'll look to hurry Arsenal, to press them, to especially if Costa's playing up front, and even if he's not, that even Griezmann and their attacking players will work really hard and put Arsenal's defenders and put their deep midfielders, whether it's Wilshere or whoever is kind of their playmaker in midfield, they put him under pressure. Try to knock him off his stride, try to worry him, even to get under his skin and maybe niggle him a little bit with, you know, with fouls and stuff like that, which Atletico are excellent at. So I can imagine them defending at times in the game. For sure, they're not going to, you know, throw people forward willy-nilly or anything, but they won't look to defend their own penalty area or anything like that. They'll try and get an away goal. I remember they went to Chelsea, it's a couple of years ago now, but in 2014 when they went to Chelsea for the second leg, everybody was thinking, oh, they're going to sit back. It was against Mourinho's Chelsea, but they flew out of the blocks and scored three goals that night. It's maybe their best performance. So they're capable of turning it on, and I'd imagine that at times within the game, they'll definitely look to attack and try and get that away goal. At other times, they will sit tight and look to frustrate Arsenal.
Yeah, it's interesting because Arsenal are not always set up particularly well to deal with a team that presses them and comes at them aggressively. And what you're saying about their what's the word I'm looking for, their ability to deal in shithousery and that kind of stuff, you know, we have been liable to fall for that a bit as well. Xhaka in particular, I think his discipline has been a lot better this season, but he is somebody who can be perhaps wound up a little bit, so hopefully that's something that Arsene Wenger will drill into his side. When you talk about Atletico, you talk about the danger man. Everybody knows Diego Costa. There's been a long history between Arsenal and Diego Costa, not a particularly friendly one. So, you know, having a pantomime villain in a game like this is always quite entertaining. Whether he plays on Thursday or not, we'll wait and see. I suspect he'll be back for the home leg at least. Antoine Griezmann, a fantastic player. But who else should Arsenal be looking out for as players of influence on the Atletico Madrid side who might need to be, I'm not going to say stopped, but who we might have to focus on a bit more than the obvious candidates?
Yeah, I think Sal Niguez is likely to play either in central midfield or maybe on one of the wide midfield positions. He can pretty much play anywhere across the middle for Atletico. And he's a really, it's hard to know what he's best at. He's a really good all-round player. But Simeone has a lot of faith in him, gives him a lot of responsibility in the team, and he tends to score in big games. Like he scored in Champions League semi-finals against Bayern Munich. He scored a super goal. He scored against Barcelona. He scored a bicycle kick in a derby against Real Madrid. And he's a guy who doesn't get loads of goals and doesn't get a lot of attention, maybe, but he's a really big game player for a young guy, maybe 22, 23, but he stamps himself on a game, does what needs to be done. Somebody else to look out for is for Salico at right back, who is definitely going to play because Juan Fran has added to the injury list. He pulled a hamstring at the weekend. And for Salico, he's somebody who, you know, doesn't always get his game for Atletico. He's definitely not one of the first players on the team sheet, but he's got a great assist record. He sets up a lot of goals. He's got a good relationship with Griezmann as well. He's able to pick him out, and he gets forward really well down the right. So I'm not sure who's going to be playing down the left for Arsenal on the left midfield and at left back, but they're going to have to really keep an eye on him because a lot of their danger in recent weeks, especially with Felipe Luis injured, comes down the right-hand side, and you know you want to keep an eye on him.
Yeah, we're not quite sure what way Arsene Wenger is going to approach this, whether he goes with a back three at home and looks to be a bit more defensively solid in order to try and keep a clean sheet and ensure we don't concede an away goal, or if he's going to look to the home game and Arsenal's home form as a real positive and a way of playing the kind of football he wants his team to play. So it depends. It depends how he approaches it. Obviously, I think Nacho Monreal will be the left back if he goes with a back four. Probably Danny Welbeck on the left-hand side, who is somebody who really does put in a good defensive shift as well to counteract that kind of a threat. But it really is a tasty encounter, this one, isn't it? Because we have, I don't know if you could equate the two clubs in a way, but you know, Arsenal aren't the biggest club in England. Atletico Madrid, not the biggest club in Spain. but in recent years perhaps have, I won't say overachieved, but have consolidated themselves as, you know, top level clubs. It's the first time they've ever met in Europe as well. I think we've done some Emirates Cup games in pre-season, but I think this is a really exciting tie.
Yeah, for sure. And it's caught, kind of caught the imagination in Spain as well, because when Atletico dropped down into the Europa League was a big disappointment for them. They weren't expecting that at all, even though they turned out it was a difficult group because Roma are in the semi-finals now and Chelsea as well, but they weren't expecting to go out. And the, so far in the Europa League, the opposition hasn't been the most most exciting, the one that hasn't really been full for any of the games so far. But the Arsenal coming, especially with it being Wenger's last season, and Wenger is so well known and so respected in Spain and in Madrid, and, you know, linked to the Real Madrid job plenty of times in the past, that it's really got the people excited about the competition. They're only a step away from the final. Maybe people were, I don't know, by hoping it to be in the final, or maybe they're happy that Arsenal are going to come here because they get to go and see Arsenal, they get to go and see the Arsenal players, Ozil coming back as well. And there's a feeling with Bayern coming to the Bernabeu on the Tuesday and then Arsenal coming to the Wanda on the Thursday, that it's a huge week of football in the capital here in Madrid, and everybody's really looking forward to it.
Yeah, has the issues that Arsenal have suffered this season, I think is a good way of putting it. Obviously, we're in the semi-finals of a European competition, which is great, but domestically, the season has been really poor. There's been the unrest. We now have the clarity over the manager's situation, but has that taken the shine off it in any way? Are people still excited to see Arsenal? Is there a reputation that kind of precedes us in a way, despite the difficulties of this season?
Yeah, for sure. Big football fans will be following pretty closely what's going on with Arsenal. The Premier League is shown on the TV here, and on the Saturday night, Sunday night highlights programs, they always show the Premier League games, and we talk about Arsenal. Maybe the domestic form, that things haven't been going so well, might go a little bit under the radar amongst the average fan, that they more think of Arsenal as a team who, you know, challenge for titles and challenge for trophies, and one of the aristocracy, I guess. Like, Atletico fans would see themselves as underdogs, I guess, against Arsenal historically, that they would look on their club as not having as much money, as not having as good players, not being as high profile. And they would see it maybe as a chance to take the scalp as well, because, as you said, they've never played before. In recent years, they've beaten Chelsea, they've beaten Bayern Munich, they've beaten Barcelona in the Champions League. They've not been able to beat Madrid in the Champions League. It's been a big sticking point for them, but they've beaten them in Copa del Rey and in La Liga. And getting Arsenal, maybe Arsenal not in their best moment, is a chance for them to get another scalp and to put hang another one on the wall, and, you know, a good way to finish the season at home. Even, you know, at the Wanda so far, there hasn't been that really big signature victory. You know, they drew against Madrid, they drew against Barca in La Liga, they lost in the Copa del Rey to Sevilla, which was another real low point in the season. You know, to go out of that competition against Sevilla wasn't expected. So if they can, you know, put in a big performance in the second leg, especially like a comeback or something like that to knock out Arsenal, that could go down as the first real big night at the Wanda, the first night that they ride it into the history books, and, well, you know, kids will remember it, all that type of thing, and Arsenal will like that opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, we've had that with the Emirates Stadium as well, where it can take a while for a new stadium to really feel like home, and a big game and a big result can often do that. While we're on the subject of Arsenal, one of the people who will be tasked with the rebuilding, or certainly the organization of the club going forward, is a former Barcelona director of football, Raúl Sanllehy. Can you give us a little bit of background on him and the sort of work that he did at Barcelona and how he's perceived over there?
He's a fascinating character, and he's somebody who would have come across, not personally, but come across in writing stories about Barcelona over the years without ever really been able to put a finger on what he does. Like, he's not somebody who spoke in the media much at all. You know, Barca have various spokespersons, people who have come out over the years and talk, whether it's the sporting director or different directors they have at the club. A lot of people who I think like to see themselves on the TV, like to feel, makes them feel important, that kind of thing, even when, you know, some of the decisions that the club made have been, you know, controversial and bad, really, in the past. You know, looking at the Neymar transfer, which, you know, still unresolved, and in the end, Barcelona the club themselves admitted to to breaking the law and to got a criminal record as a corporation, as a club in Spain. Sané was big in that deal. You know, he was very involved in the deal, would have dealt, as far as I know personally, with Neymar Sr., you know, going back when they were trying to tempt him, where Neymar's as a family were trying to decide whether to go to Madrid or to Barcelona. He was one of the main guys, very close to Sandro Rosé. I think they worked together in Nike in South America before coming into the club. So he's a guy who really knows how to get things done, I guess, you know, where the pressure points are, how to get a deal done, but not somebody who cares too much about being in the spotlight. Maybe does his best work away from the spotlight and can get things done in that type of way, which is unusual enough at Barcelona. So to see him going to Arsenal, I was surprised about it. I have to say, I didn't expect him to take on, which is a more high-profile role. I don't know how much media work he has done so far at Arsenal, but he's definitely... He seems to have more of a profile now, to be somebody who the fans talk about, who the media talk about, who is seen as a big decision maker at the club, who has that responsibility as well if things go wrong. He always seemed to dodge everything that went wrong at Barca, to be still standing when, you know, Rosé was gone, mm-hmm. when they had elections, different things, different sporting directors, Ubi Zareta got fired, all that. Everybody seemed to be in turmoil, but he was always there. So it'd be fascinating to see how things go. You know, as I say, he's surely a smart guy. It's hard to know too much about him because, you know, he doesn't seem to do too many interviews or talk too much. But, you know, Arsenal definitely have a guy who knows his way around the transfer market and the agents and all that type of thing, for
yeah.
sure.
It's been quite interesting, actually. We've heard reports that he is or has been willing to do some media stuff, but Arsenal have not allowed him to do that in the very short term. Maybe they'll give him that license in the future, but maybe it's because of what's going on with Arsene Wenger and just sort of from a respect point of view, they haven't let him do it as of yet. I mean, we know basically that he is going to be the director of football at Arsenal. He's going to be the man who's going to go out and do the signings, do the negotiations, having been recommended the players or certainly made decisions on the players in conjunction with Sven Mislintat, who is the head of recruitment. So it's a whole new thing at Arsenal. He did appear at a fans forum, which is something that happens every 3 or 4 months at the club, where the chief executive and somebody else at the club might meet representatives of a fans forum from various aspects of the club, and he did speak quite well at that. As you would expect, it's a fairly stage managed event, but it'll be curious to see how he gets on. One of the people who has been linked with the Arsenal job is obviously somebody that Sanjay would know very well, which is Luis Enrique. He had amazing success at Barcelona, but I think he's still a manager with some question marks over him, isn't he? Because of his record at Roma, because perhaps in some ways of the fact that he did what he did at Barcelona. I'm always reminded of that brilliant clip from Second Captains, where I think, I can't remember who Owen is talking to, but he says, you know, is it not fair to say anybody could manage this Barcelona team? And the guy goes, no, this is ridiculous. But there is, you know, a nugget of truth in that when you've got Suarez, when you've got Neymar, when you've got Lionel Messi, of course, and you've got Iniesta, you've got Busquets, all these amazing players. I'm not saying you don't have to have something about you as a manager, but it certainly makes it easier when you've got those guys in your team.
Yeah, for sure. Everybody's waiting to see what Luis Enrique's next step is going to be, because he didn't leave too many friends around Barcelona in the press room anyway. He's a very prickly character.
Somebody said to me that he is basically the Spanish Jose Mourinho, but with less charm, which is frightening.
Yeah, I would warm to maybe a little bit more than to Mourinho in that I don't think he didn't get into too many rows with opposition coaches or with opposition people, but he's a guy who's very sensitive about what other people say to him, especially in the media. I don't think he cares. Well, I'm going to contradict myself a little bit here. He would see himself that he doesn't care what the media say. He's no interest in what pundits say or ex-players or anything, that he's the guy doing the job. But yet it gets at him. It gets under his skin, and he got into a couple of... He was just rude to a lot of people, I think is a fair way of putting it. Tactically, he did pretty well, you know. He got the his record at Barca, you know, a couple of domestic doubles, that Champions League win with the three guys up front. He got them playing that way. You know, he had his run-ins with Messi, and he had himself and Xavi didn't always see eye to eye either. He did back down a little bit with Messi and just decided that it was better off not going against him, and that's when the team clicked and won that Champions League that year. But you know, at Celta he did pretty well, but not much better than other Celta coaches have done, like Baritzo, who ended up failing at Celta Vigo, and Unzué, his former assistant, is there this year doing more or less similar job. Have Celta up in the top half of the table. They're a really well run club. At Roma, as you say, fell out with Totti. Things didn't go so well there at all. So yeah, his next move is going to be big. I don't see him as a great fit at Arsenal, considering the work that would have to be done there. I'm not sure what his English is like. Maybe he's been learning it recently, but he's not like Guardiola, that type of ambassadorial presence or kind of cosmopolitan guy who, you know, feels at ease in different cultures. Luis Enrique is very close to the people he grew up with. You know, he's big into cycling. He does a lot of like, when he goes on holidays, what he wants to do is just go cycling with his mates, which is a solitary enough type of a thing, or a closed enough type of a thing. He's not that comfortable in the media. So to go into England and to deal with everything that comes with it, especially, you know, when things don't go so well, would be difficult. He knows football, that's for sure. He's a real football man, and he's got respect for that as a player. He was great. You know, guy who didn't have maybe the most talent, but got every inch out of what he had and won a lot at both Madrid and Barcelona. So I don't know if he'd be my first choice to appoint him, but could work out well, as you say, with Sagné. There's the link there, but be an interesting one, a difficult one maybe for him.
What about his record in the transfer market, which I don't know how much we can separate the signings he made from, you know, the people who made the signings at Barcelona. Maybe there's more of an executive committee deciding on the players who come in. But, you know, he spent a lot of money on some players who really didn't work out. Andre Gomez, for example. Thomas Vermaelen was an Enrique signing. There was a striker guy, wasn't there, who came in from Valencia, maybe? I can't remember his name.
Yeah, Paco Alcácer.
Yeah. You know, quite a number of big money signings who never did the business. And when we're really this week that Arsenal's transfer war chest isn't so much a war chest, it's only about £50 million, which in this market gets you very, very little. There's a need to spend what money you have very well. So would that be a concern for you, what he did in the transfer market at Barcelona? Or is it a bit more forgiving there, that, you know, they're willing to forgive players who don't quite make the grade as long as you're seen to be investing?
I'd say on Luis Enrique that the most input he had on signings would have been when he arrived first at the club in his first summer, when he was working closely with Zubi Zarreta, who he knew really well. They were ex-teammates. And that summer they signed Ter Stegen, Rakitic, and Luis Suarez. And they, especially Rakitic and Suarez, were people who, my understanding, or what it seemed at the time, was that they were really players that Luis Enrique wanted, that he'd identified before taking over the job, as guys who would improve the team and guys who would fit. And they did. You know, they've both been great successes. Rakitic wasn't a guy who all the biggest clubs in Europe were after, but he has showed at Barca that he's top player. Mm. In more recent years, people like Andre Gomez, Alcacer, as you say, Vermaelen, not sure whether they would have been particularly identified by Luis Enrique. He always kind of stood up for Andre Gomez, maybe took his side because he was getting a lot of criticism from the press and felt that he had to look after him, which, you know, his good management is admirable enough in itself. I don't think he's somebody who would say, I'm going to be in charge of everything, maybe like Wenger was, or Mourinho, or Benitez, or people who are always arguing with the directors about the transfer, who they're going to sign. But yeah, I'm not sure he's proven himself as a guy who can, you know, pick up bargains, who's able to wheel and deal. That's something that, you know, he hasn't really done at any of his other clubs, as far as I know. So might be a concern for sure, yeah.
All right. Well, look, I think he's one of the candidates. We're not going to find out just yet as to who is going to replace Arsene Wenger. I think that will come at the end of the season. But Dermot, we'll leave it there. Thanks a million. Great to talk to you.
Cool. Cheers, Andrew.
when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Thank you very much indeed to Dermot. You can find him on Twitter at Dermot M. Corrigan. That is at Dermot M. Corrigan. And he writes about Spanish football for ESPN, the Irish Examiner, and others. Now, Atletico Madrid have named a 20-man squad for the trip to London. And guess what? See if you can figure out who has been named in the squad. That's right. It's Diego Costa. Yeah, it was pretty obvious. Now, it is a 20-man squad, and you can only name 18 in the match day squad. So perhaps they're bringing him while he's not quite fully fit, but they're going to give him a fitness test to run out in training and hope for the best and see if they can get him out there. Maybe even just as a substitute because they know what a pain in the arse he has been to us, a thorn in our side down the years. This Rob Delaney's evil twin-looking motherfucker, that's what he is. Anyway, what can we do? If he's fit, he's going to play. If he plays, he could cause us problems. You know, he scored against us in the FA Cup final, didn't he? Is it going to be Ospina tomorrow? Is it going to be Czech? Who knows? What way is Arsene Wenger going to do his goalkeeping thing now that the trophy is so important? I suspect Ospina. I really do. I don't think he's going to go back on his word. From our point of view, we got to hope that Mesut Ozil is no longer Mesut Ozil and Mesut O-healthy. Oh, better. Oh, boy, that was really bad. Sorry about that. But you know where I was going with it. And let's hope the players can rise to the occasion, because this is an occasion. It is a huge night for the football club. It's been a weird few days with everything that's been going on. But the focus now should be on getting a good result, having a good result to take over to the second leg in Madrid. We are two games away from a European final. That is exciting. That's exciting. Whatever else is going on, however else you felt about everything else, this is the fun stuff, folks. This is what we're in it for. There's a trophy within, not quite touching distance, but we can see it. It's in the distance. Not touching distance, but it's in the distance. We can't touch the distance yet. But when we can touch the distance, we can then touch glory or something. I don't know. But look, this should be exciting. Arsenal versus Atletico Madrid. Atletico Madrid versus Arsenal. Two big games coming up in our calendar. There is, of course, the small matter of a trip to Old Trafford on Sunday. But for now, that remains irrelevant. I don't even want to think about it. It's all on tomorrow night. It's all on what we can do. Our home record is good. We're scoring lots of goals. So if we can score a few and keep a clean sheet, that will put us in a very nice position. But it is going to be extremely tough to do that against an Atletico side who have only conceded 18 goals in the league this season. In comparison to the, what have we conceded? 50, no, 45, I think. I don't want to bring anybody down. I don't want to end the podcast on a downer. But it's actually 46 goals. God damn, I shouldn't have looked that up. I should have just kept myself in willful ignorance. And ignorance is bliss, as they say. All right, folks, I will catch you on Friday, and we'll be discussing the Atletico game in Friday's podcast. So join us for that. In the meantime, have a good one. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.